Welcome to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. Today's program, What's Possible? A World's Fair of Creative Ideas. At a time when we are globally connected like never before, we have the opportunity to collaborate in new, meaningful, and purposeful ways to discover what's possible. Today's show, we speak with conference organizer Stephen Jay. We'll speak with best-selling author Barry James Dyke. We'll hear from Sarah Van Gelder of Yes Magazine and Ken Burrows of San Francisco State University's Holistic Health Center. We'll be discussing a new event in San Francisco called What's Possible. Please stay with us. Welcome to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. At a time of overwhelming discontent with our leaders, our businesses, corporate media, freedom of speech and privacy, health care and wellness, could there be a brighter light at the end of the tunnel? A gathering of people from around the world at the first ever event known as Possible. That's happening in San Francisco the weekend of May 30, 31, and it hopes the answer to these questions is yes. Joining us by phone right now is the organizer of What's Possible, the event in San Francisco the weekend, May 30, 31, Stephen Jay. Also joining us by phone, one of the participants in the conference, is best-selling author Barry James Dyke. His book, The Pirates of Manhattan, illuminates the corruption within the U.S. financial service industry and predicted the economic crisis early in 2007, months before it occurred. So we're going to speak here in the beginning of the show today with Stephen Jay, the organizer of What's Possible, and Barry James Dyke. They're going to talk to us a little bit about how this came about, and Barry will talk to us a bit about what he's going to be focusing on during the proceedings. Stephen Jay, let's start with you. Where did What's Possible come from?
What's Possible came from an idea I had well over 5 years ago, where total discontent with all the media, basically, not all the media, most of the media, and corporate America and politics and this us against them mentality, and trying to find the right home for an event. I did a lot of research, a lot of soul searching, spending many years actually trying to find the right person, the right people, and I met a guy online, believe it or not, through a posting I did, named Aaron Lander, who runs a organization called Pop-Upsters, and told what I wanted to do, and I said, this is what I need. And he said to me, I can do that. I said, okay, let's discuss this. Let's go forward. And that was a year ago. And then we spent many months just discussing what an event would look like. And it became what we're about to open this Saturday morning.
You've called this a world's fair of creative ideas. Tell people a little bit about what is going to be happening here at this gathering, this world's fair of creative ideas.
It's a good question. I'm going to give it a very direct answer. Most events, when you go to a conference, the retention rate of the information that's gathered is 5 to 10%. And so people go and they pay to go to a conference and nothing changes. And I looked at how do you actually make the change by changing the conversation. So in the conference section of the event, we actually have it designed as a creatrix where a conversation that you guys are on, such as media, how can media impact and make change? Well, in order to really understand how media can make change, we need to understand who's financing media. That's one of the reasons that Barry has been invited onto the conference is because he clearly identifies who owns the media and why it is the way it is. I mean, do we really need to see another ad for the same nonsense? We don't want an argument clinic. We want solutions. Solutions are enabled when the root cause is clearly identified. And there's just so much misinformation and disinformation about the root cause that you can't put a Band-Aid on a wound and saying, okay, the wound won't happen. You have to find out what's causing that wound. So what caused the financial crisis? What caused the media situation? What causes the public consciousness to be constantly at battle with themselves? How can you have peace in the world if people aren't at peace with themselves, right? So maybe we could lead this over to Barry, because he has not just a realization. He's actually worked and uncovered how a lot of these issues are all in bed with each other.
Barry James, Dyke. Yeah. Hi, this is Peter Phillips.
Hi,
Your
Peter.
Book, Pirates of Manhattan, talks about economic issues and banksters and that sort of idea. How does that fit into this world fair of creative ideas, what's possible?
I think it was Jim Morrison said years ago, whoever controls the media controls your mind. Although there's free speech in this country, the freedom of the press is really belongs to the man who owns the press. And the media is obviously interlocked with the banking and the financial institutions because they're major advertisers. The truth of the matter is the three largest advertisers in the United States are, number one, are the car companies, which you and I all help bail out. Number two are the mobile phone companies. And then three is the financial institutions, i.e. the banks, the Bank of America, you know, J.P. Morgan, Fidelity, what have you. So really they control, they massage the message. So anything really in regards to the truth is really not respected by the traditional media, because the media companies themselves, i.e. the major papers, whether it be the Los Angeles Times or the New York Times or any of these companies, they're all facing dire financial difficulties because of the internet. But conversely, this is part of the solution, and I couldn't do what I do without the power of the internet. And but it's all interconnected. But so my research has been about as welcome as a skunk at a summer picnic. And but it's so Stephen, I met Stephen, and we got introduced to our mutual friend who just passed away and who this whole benefit is really here for, our friend Danny Schechter. And Danny was just a wonderful, loving man who helped give me a break and get my message out there. But what I show Danny is how even the media companies themselves are actually owned with other people's money, which people have no idea how it really works.
Well, certainly Danny Schechter was a good friend of ours here at Project Censored, and we recognize that corporate media not only has consolidated over the last half century, but really has a propaganda control over the minds of people, not only in the U.S., but worldwide. And that's extremely important, because their number one religion is capitalism and profit. So that presents some difficulties when there's half the world living on less than $3 a day and 30 to 40,000 people dying daily from malnutrition and disease. So those are some of the problems. What are some of the solutions in your mind?
Any listeners who want to find out more information about me and my books, there's a ton of information just on the website. Go to www.thepiratesofmanhattan.com. Again, that's www.thepiratesofmanhattan.com. And there's a lot of good stuff there. People don't even have to buy the book, but they can find it there. But one of the things which I tell people is, you know, essentially, you know, the whole thing which is really controlling all this is the debt. And, you know, and investing in yourself and you know, and just being really cautious in these times. Because if we've learned anything from complications, financial complications end up in a disaster. And what you see what's going on right now, Peter and Mickey, and it's like 1999, 2000, 2007, 2008, all over again. I mean, America's exposure to equities is horrendous, okay? And so a dot-com or some type of a meltdown is somewhat inevitable. Who knows when? Only God knows. So I really want to have people really have more control of their own lives, really, and stay away from the propaganda.
Well, Stephen Jay, let's go back to you, given that you are sort of the brains behind this, and you're putting together the energy here to draw together a large number of people. And you mentioned before that you're working with Pop Upster in San Francisco, and so there's going to be an arts community and many other things happening at Pier 35, right? That's May 30, 31 in San Francisco. People can learn more at Possible Number 4, POSSIBL Number 4, Us online about this. But tell us a little bit. You have 2 days of events planned, and you have a series of people that are talking about, really reinventing systems, whether it's media systems, resilient communities. Again, there's going to be a lot of people here. Cindy Sheehan's going to be here. Electronic Frontier Foundation is going to be here. Richard Gage will be here. You have an amazing group of people. Sarah Van Gelder, who we'll be speaking with later in the program. Tell us a little bit again about how you see all this fitting together, this reimagining and revitalizing.
The way I see it happening is everything is a system, and a lot of people forget that. So when you look at the different people that are coming from different parts of the world, from different sectors, and Sarah coming in from Seattle, from Yes Magazine, you guys coming in from Project Censored, Barry coming in, people coming in from United Nations, people coming in from the WHO, people coming in from all around the world. I mean, we just got an email from someone who is flying in from Taiwan. The last minute note saying, I'm coming to this. This is probably the most amazing thing we've ever seen. I had to decide to build a library without knowing the authors. I had to just research and find the right people. The first person I invited was Danny Schechter. Danny is with us in spirit. I have a place card for him there. This whole event is dedicated to his life, work, and memory. And Danny helped to expose, as Barry did, the information about the banking scandal that was subprime loans, people not able to pay their loans back, banksters making money when people were defaulting, all of that stuff. So I had to say, okay, so now that we know that, and if debt unfortunately is the center of all these problems, how is a new system created? And I'm not talking about some new agey tree huggers saying we're going to go to the beach and pray and we're going to have peace and all that. That's nice, but that's not going to do the trick. What's going to do it is really understanding the root causes, and by having that understanding, how to utilize whole systems thinking to build the new. So if you look at, Barry can talk about this in depth because he's an expert here, how media and education and banks and corporations are all in business together to keep us enslaved to debt. What are the systems that we can create together that enable us to thrive without being in debt? So when you turn on television, I live in South Florida, where my average neighbor is 80-some years old, and we look at them and I say, okay, these people are sick. Why are they sick? Because when they were growing up, they were pushed on stuff that knowingly wasn't good for them. Tobacco, cigarettes, a lifestyle that was ingrained in their consciousness that if they didn't have this product, they weren't going to, quote-unquote, fit in. And that when we feel that we need to buy products to fit in, that we're being screwed with. So in a whole systems thinking, how do we create new media, new books, new education, a whole new arts community that thrives? You can't take an analog music world and turn it into digital and keep the contract the same. Because when you're signed to a label, as I'm signed to EMI as a producer, I haven't seen a royalty on a record that I won 2 Grammys for in the year 2005 or 2006. But it's the same record label that owes the Beatles over $50 million in royalties. So you have these corporations like EMI that keep getting bought and sold, Guy Hands who destroyed that. Okay?
Bankrupt.
So you look at the whole system. How does all these pieces work together? And when you look at what can Project Censored, Barry James Dyke, Sarah Van Gelder,
Free Speech
every
TV,
participant who comes to the event, do together to create a new system.
You're listening to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. We're speaking with best-selling author Barry James Dyke, and we're speaking with a organizer, Stephen Jay, who's responsible for the event What's Possible in San Francisco. And Barry, what do you hope to come out of this event? And we talked earlier about some of the things that you're going to hit on, economic issues and overarching issues. But what's possible, meaning what are we going to do about the challenges that we face? And what do you hope to have come out of this weekend?
All I just hope, Mickey and guys, is that we just start waking people up to the real problems. And so much of the heart of our problems go back to banking, issues of money and debt. And and that's really just, I want to get people to wake them up and get them excited, let them do their own research and then find the truth. And that's what I really hope for.
Stephen Jay, this What's Possible event is billed as a world fair of creative ideas. And I noticed that you'd gone to the World's Fair in 1964. I was there as well, and I remember that it was really very corporate. Major corporations talking about how nuclear energy will save us and this sort of thing. I would expect that our World's Fair of creative ideas is going to be very humanistic, very humanitarian, seeking happiness. And what is your perspective on that?
The idea for the World's Fair of Creative Ideas for a Better Future came to myself and my business partner as a way of looking up into the air and dreaming, you know, kind of like thinking the way that, say, Ron Howard would create a film for Imagine Studios or Spielberg would create a film about dreaming. That was one of the beauties of a lot of their projects. There's going to be no corporations involved. I'm not for sale. I've been asked by various presenters if they could be part of the show, and I've turned most people down. And the reason being is I didn't want any corporate infiltration to contaminate the vision of something. So when you look at a little kid and everything is new and they haven't gone through the processes of life, where they're constantly told, no, you can't touch that, no, you can't do that, no, you cannot think that, you cannot go there, etc. You look at someone that hopefully is dreaming and thinking like everyone, you know, playing in the backyard and having fun and being free. Well, if the Internet was able to do anything, and I think that its potential still exists, but it's not going to happen from our current dot-coms or dot-communists, as I tend to call them. It's going to happen by people getting together and utilizing it for solutions-based initiatives. So it will be nothing like the World's Fair where you walk around and here's the Dome of Tomorrow and here's this new ecological initiative. Personally, while I think we have a lot of issues with our resources, I believe that we have an imagination crisis, more so than a resource crisis. Yes, we've contaminated the air, we've contaminated the food, we've poisoned our food, we've contaminated the media, we've contaminated the health system. George Harrison said in his last interview, he said that doctors, for the most part, don't know anything about health. They just know disease. So how do you enable a healthy economy by creating something new for the people? Now, we want people to imagine things. So when people say we need to have a PowerPoint presentation, I just say, no, you don't. We're not doing that. You want to do that? Go to TED and other events, which, you know, I'm going to be very upfront. But, you know, let the egos exist there. I don't want that. I want to create an environment that provokes imagination. My God, I didn't know that. Well, now that I know this and this and this and that, how can I utilize that information to go forward and get into my car and know where the obstacles are before I start my path to my destination?
Well, Stephen Jay, we're certainly looking forward to What's Possible. And there are an array of sponsors, including KPFA, Free Speech Radio, Project Censored, Free Speech TV, Hip Hop for Change, Harmony Connections, The Real News Network, Meta Center for Nonviolence, and many more. You've got a great collection of speakers, and you've put together what looks to be an amazing, interesting, and very positive series of interactions and ideas and events. So thank you so much for your efforts, and we certainly look forward to what comes of What's Possible.
Thank you so much for being there to support this.
Welcome back to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. Today's program, we're focusing on what's possible. We're focusing on a solutions-based conference that's taking place in San Francisco, May 30, 31. And we were speaking prior with the organizer of the event, Stephen Jay, also best-selling author Barry James Dyke. We're now joined by Sarah Van Gelder of Yes Magazine and Ken Burroughs. And here's Peter to introduce Sarah to you.
Sarah Van Gelder is the co-founder and editor-in-chief of Yes Magazine and YesMagazine.org, a national nonprofit media organization that reframes the biggest problems of our time in terms of what are the solutions.
And Ken Burroughs is also joining us. He's returning to the program, as is Sarah. Ken has been an educator and consultant for over 30 years, teaching holistic health studies at San Francisco State University. He's the founder and director of the Holistic Health Learning Center there. He is also a longtime participant with Project Censored, and he's the faculty advisor of Project Censored at San Francisco State, and he's on the board of the Media Freedom Foundation. Ken, thank you for joining us today.
Good to be here.
Sarah, thank you for joining us again on the Project Censored show.
I'm delighted.
So, Sarah, let's start with you. You're coming down from Seattle, but very briefly, and we were talking about this conference, this event, about what's possible. There's been some things going on in your neck of the woods about what's possible, the kayaking protest of big oil.
That's right. The Shell oil rig that's on its way up to Alaska has stopped in Seattle, and there's a whole group of activists who've been wonderfully organized by a group called the Backbone Campaign and others, 360.org, and others who have actually gotten kayaks, and tribal members gotten in traditional canoes, and people went out on the water and said, you know, we don't want this here. We don't want the Shell oil process. It's going to end up in the Arctic, but that's going to affect everyone down here as well, because we're all affected by climate change. We don't need to be getting more oil out of the ground. It ought to be under the oceans. It ought to be staying safely underground. And there's huge potential issues around oil spills also in these very rough waters up in the Arctic. So Seattle has really come together to oppose this. The city council doesn't want them there. The mayor has made clear that the permit that the Port of Seattle gave out is not valid. It doesn't include the kind of activities the Shell oil rig is involved in. And I believe it was the Department of Natural Resources recently said that their presence is in the Port of Seattle is unconstitutional. So they're being made unwelcome, but they are still here at the moment.
Sarah, you have a new book out called Sustainable Happiness: Live Simply, Live Well, and Make a Difference. I noticed in the book that you described how we've had 100 years of corporate advertising through media trying to convince us that buying things will make us happy. What is your idea around happiness, and to what extent will you be talking about that at the What's Possible conference?
Well, thanks for mentioning that. Yeah, that I'm actually going to be giving a keynote talk about sustainable happiness. And it starts with just what you said about thinking about how our sense of what brings us happiness has been colonized by advertisers. They've kind of taken over what spiritual leaders for hundreds or thousands of years have told us, and what our grandmother told us, and what we know in our own gut to be true, which is that happiness doesn't come from consuming more stuff and all the negative repercussions that has on the planet. Happiness actually comes from things like the quality of our relationships. It comes from things like having meaningful work and ways of contributing to society. It comes from having enough, but not from having too much. We don't actually get any happier, the research shows us, once we get over a certain point in terms of material success. So what we're talking about in this book is, how do we reclaim happiness from the large corporations who have colonized it and convinced us to behave in ways that, in fact, don't bring about either our happiness or the well-being of the planet?
Ken Burroughs, let's bring you into the conversation here. You know, in addition to the many things that you do with the Holistic Health Learning Center, you've run a conference on the future of healthcare, and you run the Gandhi King Season for Nonviolence at San Francisco State University. And you teach classes, you know, about a lot of the things that Sarah was just talking about. And in fact, I have had the pleasure of coming to several of your classes to talk most recently. this past semester on stress management. And, you know, you really try to help people deal or navigate some of these waters and find what's real and try to escape the superficial. You want to add to what Sarah was saying?
I've been a fan of Sarah's work for years, so it's nice to hear her evolution as well. I've had the privilege of teaching a particular course. It's called Holistic Health, Human Nature, and Global Perspectives, which is really about bringing holistic literacy into facing whatever is current for us as individuals and as a society. So I've had the burden and the gift of teaching about a topic that's of this basically our unfolding evolution for decades, and it's been very useful for me in my own thinking. So I've learned that the complex nature of our challenges require us to really to think more comprehensively and what I call holistic literacy. And that's caused me to think that basically we're trapped in a negativity bias. Humans have evolved to be fearful. We've learned, as our ancestors did, to pay attention to the possible threats, both real and imagined. And that vulnerability to being threatened leads us to think in ways that are really problematic. We get focused on problems that we want to fix rather than see the complexity of challenges that we're swimming in. And we don't know how to expand our thinking. So that's my biggest message, is that there's an inherent creative tension in the dualisms of our thinking, and we don't know how to think often well enough to face the very challenges we're looking at.
Sarah Van Gelder, this event, this World Fair of Creative Ideas, as Stephen Jay calls the What's Possible event, he says it's what happens when a group of dedicated and determined individuals from around not only the Bay Area but around the world unite to build the new. I think I heard a little bit of what Ken was saying there about building the new. And what will you be sharing with people? And again, this is the larger part of the message of your recent book.
Well, yeah, I love what Ken just said, because I think that it's true that we focus in on our threats and fears, and that creates a whole series of things within our bodies as well as within our relationships that prevent us from thinking more expansively about what's possible. So I love the title of the conference, What's Possible. And that of course, is what Yes Magazine has been looking at since we were founded in 1996. So it's just, I'm just really excited that there's a whole conference devoted to that very idea. So what I'm going to be talking about is further on that question of sustainable happiness, is how did our notion of happiness get colonized? You know, how did we come up with these odd ideas about happiness that now are so pervasive in our culture about how we have to have certain kinds of stuff and certain kinds of status symbols in order to be happy? So how did that come about? What's really been happening in terms of our economy and what's been happening in the separation between genuine progress in terms of how we the people are doing compared to how the economy is growing? You know, the economy keeps growing faster and faster to higher and higher levels of GDP, but our genuine progress has not been increasing since the 70s. So why is that? And I want to talk about that. And then I want to talk about, what does it mean to reclaim happiness? How can we do that in our own lives? But even more than that, how can we do that as a people? Because we're not isolated people. So even though a lot of the self-help books sort of suggest that you can, you know, do these six easy steps and you will be happier, the reality is that those can take you only so far, because we also live within a social context. We live with families. We live in communities. We live in an environment that is really under siege right now with climate change and drought and flooding and species extinctions. And all of those affect our well-being too. So what does it mean to reclaim our happiness, to reclaim the power to define as a people what we want, rather than simply accepting what corporations want us to do, want us to believe, and want us to consume?
Sarah, I think I understand what it means on a micro level. And it's sort of, you know, avoid comparison, savor your moments, have meaningful goals. There's quite a bit out there on that sort of thing. Make friends, treasure family. Those are all ideas that work at kind of a micro level individually. How do we deal with this in terms of a macro level? This mass inequality. I mean, you talked about how Shell Oil is going to be drilling in the Arctic areas, and that, you know, thousands of people are out in kayaks protesting that and trying to block that. But is that the direction? I mean, we really have gross inequality in the world. Increased GDP just means the top 1% get richer. The Occupy movement gave us the mantra, you know, 1%, 99%. That was highly successful. So people have that in their mind. Can we move on that and manifest some major changes in terms of macro levels of power?
Well, that's a $64 million question, I think, is whether we can. Because I think certainly there's a lot of people who desperately want to do that. So let me just run down a few things that I think are helpful as we think about how to actually achieve that. One is to make sure that we don't get too stuck in the partisan gridlock, because I think there's this effort, especially with the election season coming up, to get us pigeonholed in Democratic and Republican camps. And both of them have failed, at least in the main power structure, to address the kinds of issues we're talking about, the rule of corporations, the climate crisis, and so forth. So I'm not saying don't participate in the election, but keep your independence and keep thinking about ways of reaching out to people who are unlikely allies. I did an interview recently with Ralph Nader and Daniel McCarthy, who's the editor of the American Conservative magazine. And I was astounded at how many things, when they started listing specific things about the U.S. role in the world and about breaking up the too-big-to-fail banks and on and on and on. There were so many things that they, getting money out of politics, that they agreed on and that a majority of Americans agree on. So that's one thing, is to just not let ourselves get put into the pigeonholes of the two political parties as they charge forward with this big presidential campaign. The second thing is to look at our community scale, because I think a lot of people don't realize how much power they already have in their communities. And that means that there's tremendous numbers of things that people are and can be building in their own communities that build more equity, that, you know, get good, healthy food to low-income people, that take on inequality in the policing and in the school system. There are many, many things that people are already doing at the community scale that make a difference. And when we give those things energy and pay attention to them, they can spread throughout the country. And the other thing that I think a lot of people don't realize about the community scale is it's a place where, you know, when you get together with a few other people and you take a stand, you can really have an impact in terms of the larger conversation, whether it's about somebody wants to put a pipeline through your backyard or bring an oil rig through, any number of things. When people at the community scale get together, that can make a really big difference. And I guess the third thing is to realize that we both need the big social movements. We need to take on money in politics. We need to take on the climate challenge, and we need to be building the new kind of a society that we want, so people know that it's possible and they don't feel so stuck in the old society. One example of that is we do a lot of coverage in Yes Magazine on the cooperative movement. Because if people believe the only place that jobs come from is big corporations, then of course you have to be loyal to big corporations. But if you start realizing ways in which we can create our own jobs, and they can be democratic, and they can have paths to promotion and to material well-being, as well as a sense of empowerment and democracy in the workplace, when people see that and experience that, then it changes the sense of what's possible and gives people another option besides just out and out loyalty to the large corporations that are creating so much damage.
Indeed, Sarah Van Gelder, one of our top stories from a few years back was on the underreporting of the rise of cooperatives and so forth. And also wanted to underscore and repeat your discussion with Ralph Nader, the right-left matchup. We talked to Ralph not long ago and talked about the book Unstoppable and talked about these alliances and these different ways, these paradigm-shattering ways to address the challenges we face and tell new stories. You're listening to the Project Censored Show on Pacific Radio. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. We'll be right back after this musical break. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. We're continuing with our guests, Sarah Van Gelder of Yes Magazine and Ken Burrows, a longtime contributor and supporter of Project Censored and also director of the Holistic Health Library at San Francisco State University. Ken Burrows, I want to come to you now. Sarah just left us off with three points and wanted to hear from you. I know a lot of what you do is reimagining the story and retelling the stories of the challenges we face. And so we find often we find ourselves reacting, right, to a lot of these kind of things and pointing out the problems and maybe not working proactively and creating new ways to live basically in societies. Well, could you talk to us a bit about that and your work on that?
You bet. Glad to. Basically, I think better stories change everything. Better stories change the world. Every day all over the whole world, people are solving problems. If we look at human evolution, and first to give us just a little bit of context, just imagine it's a little hard to step back because we're so locked into and swimming in these so-called problems. But in 1840, we had our first billion people show up on the planet, the first 1 billion humans. 1953, our second billion, and now 7+ billion. And moving toward 9 billion plus if we continue on our current path, which is its own question, by 2050. So we're in a very different world than the world our parents have inherited. And what's common in the past and the present is that we've been evolving for over 600 million years, this nervous system that we're using to reflect in speech and thought, from ancient jellyfish to the modern human. And our ancestors had to make critical decisions many times a day, throughout the day, not only to survive, but to thrive. And our brain size is as large as it is because we, as mammals, became very social. So we're social beings. And really understanding what new theorists are calling big history, this large framework that creates a sense of the power and the direction of evolution, that our collective biography is this evolutionary reality. And if we can begin to understand some of the basic aspects of evolution, including our creative edge, that we're storytelling animals. The physiological and psychological effects of humans, of the stories we tell every day, are really impacting us. The best stories in humanity, the highest aspects of our nature, are typically not covered in the media. The media tends to the things that are, you know, usually failing, the murders, the failure rates, the problems. We're not really getting the media, and this is why Yes Magazine has been so important for decades to me, and I think many, many others, is we need better stories. And the spell of a story, it captures us. It has deep impact on us, including fiction. Fiction, I think, has been really malaligned. It's a recent article came out of the Boston Globe, talked about the power of fiction to really support society, and they called it social glue, that when we're absorbed in a story, we drop our intellectual guard, we drop that negativity or fear bias, and we begin to move toward the higher aspects of our nature and toward the possible. Fiction shapes us mainly for the better, not for the worse. Because we get to look at nuance, we get to relax, we get to think about our complexity, we get to believe in the possible. And this awakening of imagination, I think, is really the key to our future. We get so trapped into thinking versus wondering. And to me, this is where a lot of my work has led, to the study of creativity and the power of play, to really rethinking education. Education has been centered around critical thinking appropriately, but creative thinking and the power of play is also really important to surviving. And the decline of play and the time for play and time for the arts, I can go on and on about that, but we're play-starved, basically. Not just game theory, which is important, but really play itself. The child that's playing is creating in the world. Play is this whole learning how to adapt and instead of just adapting, to create and inside of problem situations. So to me, the natural power of the human imagination is what we need to unleash, and a big part of my work is really trying to support that. and the power of story and the power of good, power of the arts to really awaken and remind us that we're free and that there are many, many possibilities if we just begin to think and collaborate.
Well, Ken and Sarah, I'm really looking forward to this conference. And what I'm hearing is both the idea that corporate media and capitalism is basically giving us the message that you need to be afraid if you're not employed, your life will be miserable, and you won't be able to buy anything, and then you won't be happy. And it creates this whole kind of interconnected cultural domination of human beings individually and collectively. And what I'm hearing you both say is that there's possibilities of going beyond that, of being creative through cooperative efforts, both at a community level and a global level, that can challenge that sort of mentality of repression and fear and open up the creative aspects of what human beings could really be. Could either of you expand on that? Sarah, would you talk a little bit on that?
Yeah, I think that's really well put. I would just add that the commons is a really important part of that, because if you don't have a job, then you need access to some sort of commons in order to be able to make a livelihood. So way back in the past, that would have been the forest or the waters where anyone could go fish or anyone could go hunting. As large corporations have privatized more and more and more of everything, not just the physical landscape, but also the intellectual landscape, the commons is more out of reach. So I think one of the big struggles that we have in order to open up that possibility space is also to reclaim those sorts of commons, including the knowledge commons. You know, most intellectual advancement comes on the shoulders of the people who came before, but increasingly a lot of that intellectual property becomes property, becomes patented. It becomes harder to build on. So the kind of creativity that Ken is talking about becomes more difficult to access. So I just loved what Ken had to say about creativity and play. We've done a few issues of Yes on education and keep coming back to that. It's just kind of astounding that so much of our education, which actually, by the way, is another access to a commons, our knowledge commons, but so much of education has turned into this fill out the forms, take the standardized tests, fit in, learn to tolerate boredom, learn to take direction. Instead of fostering the kind of creativity and expansive thinking and the emotional intelligence and those sorts of entrepreneurial and leadership skills that we need from the next generation. So I think there's a really interesting thing going on right now in that education world in terms of pushing back on it.
Sarah, that was very well put. Ken, let's get a last statement from you for now. You're both going to be speaking Saturday, Sunday at What's Possible. And Sarah, in fact, you're speaking on Saturday at noon. We'll be on a panel together with Nolan Higdon and Barry Dyke and TM Scruggs, the Real News Network. Ken, you'll be on Saturday. Sarah, you have another talk going on. Michael Negler will be there from the Meta Center for Nonviolence, Cindy Sheehan, and so many people coming and talking about a lot of about what's possible and the solutions. So definitely an exciting series of events planned. And Ken, let's just hear just some last words from you here. What do you hope for?
I'm really hoping that we as humans develop a new relationship with our mind. The nature and power of contemplative practice. When I think of collaboration, I think often my own issues get in the way of me collaborating, even with my housemates, right? So we're hosting a conference on our campus on the power of mindfulness and compassion. These inner practices really help us deepen our emotional intelligence and this ability to hold a larger space so that collaboration can happen. So my thought is that both the personal and the collective work go hand in hand, and somehow the uncertainty of being in a relationship with others often drives a lot of fear, and that can create a lot of negativity again versus really opening up to these positive practices. And as we do that, we repeated patterns really change the way we think and the way we even our brains get structured over time by our thinking and acting patterns. So my hope is to really bring both these worlds together, the collaborative and the contemplative.
Ken Burroughs, it's always a pleasure to have you on the Project Censored Show. Definitely looking forward to what comes out of What's Possible. And Sarah Van Gelder of Yes Magazine, thank you for joining us again. And again, it'll be a delight to see what comes out of the event and what's possible.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Sarah. Thanks, Ken.
You bet.
This is the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. Today's show, we're focusing on What's Possible. It's a series of talks in San Francisco, May 30 and 31 at Pier 35, www.possible4, that's the number 4, there's no E, possible4.us, for more information. Margaret Mead said, never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed people can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has, and that's the impetus for this event, this gathering of people that are solutions-oriented. So it's not just going to be one of these types of events where we're speaking about problems. It's about what are people doing to address the challenges we face in the 21st century, from reinventing consciousness to reinventing media. Project Censored will be there. I'll be on a panel with Sarah Van Gelder of Yes Magazine, Barry Dyke, T.M. Scruggs, Nolan Higdon, several other panels here. And, of course, those of you not in the San Francisco Bay Area can check the ProjectCensored.org website for interviews with people that are there. Michael Levitin of Occupy.com is among the people there. Richard Gage of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth will be there. Cindy Sheehan will be there. Michael Negler will be there. Electronic Frontier Foundation. Again, it's a long list of activists and people that really are working to change things. Ken Walden of What the World Could Be. Natalie Nava, The Story of Stuff. In fact, Peter, you're on a panel. Localize, the essentialness of going from globalized ecosystems to local ecosystems that benefit communities, including the people who live and work there in those communities. And you're going to be talking with several folks, including Ken Walden, of What the World Could Be. Peter, what do you hope to talk about at the event?
Well, I certainly think that there's an opportunity to think of these of global issues and problems from a grassroots, bottom-up perspective. But understanding where power lies in the world and to what extent wars and central banks and the elite classes of capital in the world dominate that, but how vulnerable they are. I mean, we're really thinking along the lines of, you know, less than 1% of the people controlling $100 trillion worth of wealth in the world. And they're the ones that get to make the decisions and decide how that's going to be spent and what areas of growth and economy or economics are going to could be involved. And their primary concern is one of capital return. They're looking for 6%, 7% return, meaning constant growth and expansion. And that's an inevitable problem. It's a problem with the environment. It's certainly a problem with the inequality that happens in the world. It's a spiritual problem as well. And that was something that Sarah Van Gelder was talking about today. So we think that this is a very important opportunity to explore the regions of change possibilities from the bottom up, understanding that the global economy is dominated by so very few people, that these people can be identified, we can have conversations with them, and we can ask them to join in our efforts for sustainability and building happiness in the world instead of poverty and inequality.
That's right, Peter. And again, you take a look at the folks that are all converging on San Francisco for What's Possible. And I had already mentioned, Saturday, 4 o'clock is Cindy Sheehan. 5 o'clock is Michael Negler of the Meta Center for Nonviolence. Electronic Frontier Foundation, Reinventing Privacy and Personal Freedom. We have a youth panel, a student panel, talking about student activism. And particularly, these are young women that did work with us at Project Censored on women in media and depictions of gender in media. So this event runs the gamut. And it's not just the kind of event where there's, you know, older generations of people talking at each other. This is a really mixed group of people that are talking about what's working and what, you know, again, what isn't working. Of course, we have a collective understanding. But what is working and what are people doing to face to overcome the challenges we face? So we certainly invite people to check out the website, www.possibleforus.com. That's possible4.us. You can also learn
the
more.
The people that are hearing the show, you know, after the event has occurred, can be able to actually be able to go online and pick up and hear a whole lot of what happened that over this weekend.
And you can go to the website there, The Possible for Us, or you can go to projectcensored.org. Peter, given that we've helped bring some of the people here for this event, I think it's worth noting overall, again, we'd mentioned earlier that this was an event dedicated to Danny Schechter, the news dissector. You know, and Danny certainly had a real knack for telling the news as it really was, longtime friend of Project Censored. We also, again, I mentioned before, Michael Levitin will be here from Occupy.com. I think there's a lot of synergy between, you know, some of the things that people like Schechter did for so many years, that Levitin and the Occupy movement really wants to kind of carry on. You know, a lot of people say, well, where did Occupy go? Well, I mean, the Occupy movement didn't really disappear. It's working on doing things. It's working on debt relief. It's working on jubilees. It's working on many, many things. And that meme that we mentioned earlier, the 99.1% meme, that's something that really has stayed with us. And I think that's also something that's part of this event about what's possible, is realizing not only what we face, but realizing that we are the majority in all of this. And we have the power to reclaim the commons of all that we share.
Well, the transnational corporate class, that 0.001%, 6 or 7,000 people in the world that control $100 trillion or manage that money, they were terrified of Occupy. They got their police state cohorts to infiltrate literally every Occupy group in the country. They do the same thing in Spain, same thing in Italy, same thing in Greece, trying to undermine and break up the democracy movements that are occurring worldwide. That tells us the degree of their vulnerability. You know, a police state can only go so far when millions of people cooperate in terms of trying to make change and demand change. It can occur, it can happen.
And I think, again, that's the main purpose of this kind of convergence, what's possible. And this is the first major event of its kind in San Francisco Bay Area. And the organizer, Stephen Jay, says he's already working on another one next year. And again, I think that the purpose here is networking, building on solutions. And again, there's a fantastic list of sponsors that I had mentioned as well. And I think that people want to feel part of something, and they want to feel they're part of something that's working. This event is a large group of people that know what things are working and are very interested in reaching out and sharing with other people. So we certainly hope people will learn more about this, POSSIBL4.US. You can learn more at projectcensored.org. Free Speech TV will be there, along with Real News, Project Censored, Hip Hop for Change, Meta Center for Nonviolence.
Well, I think that's a really important message. And one of the core themes of this is of course, media. And the importance of having media that speaks to all the people and speaks to our hearts and speaks to our desire for creativity and joy in our lives, and not just owning things and buying things, which has been the corporate message for 100 years, is to acquire things that will make you happy. And certainly we know that that isn't true, and it doesn't make us happy or healthy. And we need to be aware of that, share that kind of information, act on it in our daily lives.
And we're finishing the next Project Censored book now. And as always, we have a Media Democracy in Action segment that celebrates not only truly free press organizations and free press journalists, muckraking journalists, but also civil society organizations. So again, it's a celebration of people that are doing things to create a true democratic grassroots society. And again, at Project Censored, we think that a big part of that is having free and open media. That's why we're here at Project Censored on the Free Speech Radio, KPFA Free Speech Radio. I feel like bringing people these kinds of key issues, and again, not just the problems week after week, but avenues where they can network with people and talk about solutions, is really a proactive part of what we're trying to create.
Well, certainly one aspect that Stephen Jay has focused on is the degree to which apathy in human populations is kind of like a disease. I mean, it's instilled in us by keeping us afraid, fearful, threatened through stories within corporate media that are just constantly bombarding us with not only buy things, but be scared of this and afraid of that. That creates sort of a feeling of helplessness, which is manifested through a sense of apathy. And that's not what human beings are. Human beings are self-actualizing, creative, engineering kinds of people that want to do better in their lives, protect their lives. And the whole message is basically shut up and go shopping from the corporate media, when in fact what people are looking for is ways to be creative, ways to make their lives better, and to understand many kinds of just really to mean have a good best friend. So building community, building ways of understanding, that's what this conference is about, and certainly building friends in your own neighborhood that share these ideas, or coming to the conference or participating in the conference and meeting people like that is a big part of what's happening.
Indeed, and if people want to learn more, you can go to projectcensored.org or possible for us, POSSIBL number 4.US.
Conditions, not free market propaganda and corrupt politicians, because they own by special interest groups that fund their campaigns.
That's our program for today. Thanks so much for joining us. The Project Censored Show airs on 22 stations around the U.S. For more information and to listen to archives of previous shows, go to www.projectcensored.org. Please follow and like us on Facebook. To learn more about how you can bring the Project Censored Show to your local community radio station, you can contact Mickey at projectcensored.org or Peter at projectcensored.org. Anthony Fest is our producer. Erica Bridgman is our engineer. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. We'll see you next time.
Created by criminal minds, political ties, habitualized alibis, disguised under the guise of democracy, politics, and the apocalypse. Got the skies like an ominous. So the ocean burned bright with waves full of poison. Genocide wars fall for little boys, and the weapons manufactured paid for by taxes, while the bridges and the levees and the mines collapsing. All the prisons build the capacity, citizens. In the times for the master thief, combine, conquer, steal a masterpiece. Open your eyes and realize what's happening. Time's running out to reach all potential fame at the table, then you're probably on the menu. We got that love of the brothers and our sisters.